This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. And yeah, I've been talking about Mike Schilt's presser a lot this morning. Certainly, I missed it yesterday. I had to coach T-ball. Got to coach T-ball, I should say. And it was a great, great game. The boys really battled.
You got a very nice compliment on social media.
I did. It really brought tears to my eyes.
Tim Flannery called you a great coach.
I was not expecting that, and he said, you're a great coach. And to hear that from Tim Flannery, who is a great coach, like one of the best.
Multiple World Series ring-winning coach.
He's one of the most detail-oriented guys ever, and it's fun, man. Like, I coach Flann's grandson, Jesse, who I just adore, and I adore all the kids, but Jesse is like, you know, he's a little bit smaller than everybody else, grinds. When he comes up to the plate, he does like he's got like the look, like he's going to be a killer. And I mean that in a good way.
Killer. He's a little Flann.
A little Flann. Yeah. And the fun thing is well, Flann will come to games and stuff. And I've asked him 1,000 times, get your ass out here and help me teach these guys how to throw a ball. And he goes, nope. He goes, let me know when they're about 10. And once we start doing leadoffs and pickoffs, I got you. And I'm like, thank God, because that's the detail. Those are the details that you don't really think about when you coach a T-ball. Go out, have fun, try to pay attention so you don't get smoked in the face. You know, make a throw, make a play, things like that. You know, hit the ball hard, all that stuff. That's easy.
Now, I know you're not planning on coaching deep into Bo's career.
Not super deep.
But if you did, you know, I would like to see you make it long enough where maybe Flann could be your assistant. You can make him third base coach. Well, have him, you know, get the windmill back out and start waving runners home.
Here's the thing. If Tim Flannery is on my staff, he's the head coach. Oh. I'm then the assistant coach, fungo hitter, ball collector.
Yeah, but Flann had his best success as the assistant, as the third base coach.
I understand that, but I'm also not an idiot.
Why would you take him out of that role?
I'm not an idiot. He will be. If he wants to, I'll do all the admin. All he has to do is show up like Elton John. Just show up. Here's the team, Flann, coach him. And then I'll pick up all the gear. I'll hit fungos.
Doug Gottlieb, Deion Sanders.
Just show up.
He can just show up game day and just be there.
You don't have to send out any admin emails. I'll talk to the parents. I'll do everything. But you teach them the game of baseball because you're a genius at the game of baseball. It was such a nice compliment, Benny, and I loved it. So I did miss the presser. I was so happy to miss the presser in the end of the game to get to go out and coach and be with my son and play ball with the kids. It was awesome. It's going to be my last game of the year. I'll miss the very last game next year because I'll be out of next week because I'll be out of town. And we're going to let the moms coach. Moms are coaching the final T-ball game, and Hannah did not want to do it. Then the other moms got really excited, so now she's going to do it. So now you get to kind of put your money where your mouth is, because I get a lot of advice.
Do you think they'll have a different touch? Will it be...
Bo said to her, he goes, well, you're just going to tell us to do our best. And Hannah, and Hannah goes, isn't that what you want? And Bo's like, nah, not really. So the moms are going to coach next week. And again, because I get a lot of advice on, you know, how to coach and stuff from certain unnamed person. So I said, well, it's all yours. You've got the con. Next week, you get to take and herd these little cats. So it'll be fun. And hopefully they continue to play very well as they have all year. But it's been a blast. But I missed that press conference. And there's a couple of things, too, that people have kind of brought to my attention. Paul, you have the clips of it? Because I would like to go back and listen to the part about the boos and stuff. I saw a lot of people getting up in arms about boos.
Well, I did see quotes. Like, if you want to see a player who gets it, I understand Michael King had a bad start yesterday, but he clearly gets it. I mean, we saw that when we talked to him at spring training. You could just tell, sharp guy, he understands. And his quote yesterday was, we're fully deserving of it if we play that poorly. I continue to think we have some smart fans here, and they know when they are watching bad baseball. So we have to figure that out. I mean, whether you think that or not, that's a good fan service quote by the losing starting pitcher for that day, who got booed along with the rest of his teammates. You know, there's not a fan that can complain about what Michael King had to say. Xander Bogaerts, he said, 1-0 homer, I hear a boo already. We all want to play well. We all want to contribute. Play better. You don't like the boos? Play better. That's all I can say. Now, Xander has the experience of playing in Boston, where
King in New York.
I'm sure he's heard plenty of boos over his career. Maybe not directed at him necessarily. He was pretty good while he was there. But he's heard them before, and he certainly understands that they are part of the game.
Yeah, and I don't know why.
I know that Mike Schilt was asked about the boos. He didn't really address it, I thought.
He did a little bit.
Kind of.
But play the clip again.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I expect to win every series, whether we just got through playing, you know, Bingo Long and the Traveling All-Stars or, you know, whoever we play. And I don't mean to be overly facetious, but, Bingo. You know, a little levity maybe. But, yeah, I mean, listen, like I said, I the sky's not falling in our clubhouse, I can tell you that. I appreciate and understand the questions. I think I've been able to explain and support and, you know, all I know is our clubhouse is in a good spot. The sky's not falling. We didn't appreciate, didn't enjoy, or disappointed all of the frustration that is real with losing because it's an end-game result. I get it. But I also appreciate the fact that our team's going in a good direction in a lot of areas, and we've just got to be able to put it together with our pitching and our hitting to be able to put together some more wins and more series wins like we've done more recently.
And, Mike, I know you're hearing sky-is-falling questions from us here in the media, but when you hear the boo birds out there at a home game, which we heard more than once today, does that send a different message as opposed to just hearing it from us in here?
Yeah, it sends a message. I mean, you know, listen, people show up and want to win. I get it. You know, I'll answer for it. It's interesting how, you know, a couple days, you know, changes the complexity of how people react, and I get it. I mean, we're here to compete and win games, and I'm not, again, ultimately I'm not going to alibi it, but you tell me, what do you think message they're sending me and us?
Not happy with the offense, not happy with the Rockies coming in as one of the worst teams in baseball, and yeah. And three straight games in a row.
Yeah, I get it. I understand it. I understand it completely.
I didn't hear anything about him. I think he understands why they boo, you know, the when he does say, what does that accomplish? I mean, he's been around the game 30 years. He knows exactly what it...
Well, we talked to Brett Boone yesterday.
Yeah.
It doesn't accomplish anything.
No, yeah. I mean, but it's not a bad thing.
It makes
se.
Fans feel a little bit better. You can't do anything when you're in the stands. When you're frustrated, there's one thing you can do.
That's it, yep.
And when you boo, it's basically to make yourself feel better. You can't possibly... Well, you can be delusional enough, but you shouldn't be delusional enough to think that your boos are going to suddenly turn around the team on the field. They're down 4-0, but if we just boo loud enough, they'll realize, oh, we must be doing something wrong. Let's fix it and play better.
I was supposed to roll over.
Yeah,
there, but apparently.
that doesn't happen. That does not happen. I don't feel like there's a lack of accountability in terms of players going, man, you know, as long as they're not booing, I can get away with hitting, you know, 185. But once they start booing, I better start hitting better. They all would like to hit better. They all go up to the plate. They would like to be more effective at the plate. The boos don't do anything at all other than, understandably, make us feel a little bit better as fans, because it's the only thing you can do when you're frustrated and you're sitting there in a game and it's going poorly.
Well, listen, though.
And you can't do anything else.
Listen, man. I think it's a bit dismissive of the fan base. Here's the thing. The fans really have two options. Here's their options. Don't show up. That's an option that you have to say. And if I'm a player,
sometimes the loudest statement, oftentimes the loudest statement you can make is with your wallet.
Correct. So here's the thing. If I'm a player and our team is not playing well, but the stands are packed and they're booing, I don't know that it doesn't do anything for me. I really don't. It's going to hurt. Sure. It's going to sting. Yeah. Better have them booing and showing up than not showing up at all.
Undoubtedly.
No question about it. I would rather have people hate me as long as they listen. Put it on my tombstone. You may have hated me, but you listened. I don't care, really. I mean, I'm still going to do my show every day. And I know Xander and Manny and Toddy and all those guys are going to go out and try to do their jobs every day. When you are the only major league game in town for now, right, this is what comes with it, I think. And it hasn't really been the case. And people rag on us because, you know, we're too easy on them. And I think the worst thing you can be as a fan is apathetic. Oh, fine. There was, when I moved here in 10, a lot of apathy. $25 gets me in the ballpark, get a hot dog, have a beer, call it a day. Don't really care about the result. With expectations comes, you need to perform. Expectations are good. The old saying that I love is pressure is a privilege. That's a massive privilege because so many teams don't have any pressure because they're not good. They're not expected to be good. They didn't spend any money. They didn't trade for superstars. The superstars of this team should be getting booed right now, and they should understand why they're getting booed, in my opinion. You know, they're not playing well. They make a ton of dough to do it. They have to lead on the field, off the field, whatever. It comes with the territory, you know? And so I do understand fans' frustration. I don't know that it's going to motivate someone, but it's the same argument we hear all the time about, well, the media is softer on them. The media is so soft on them. I don't want a player that needs to be motivated by media. I don't want a player that needs to be motivated by a fan base.
I really don't think any of them are. I don't think any of them sit there and I mean, is there a single player in the history of baseball who got better because someone asked a tough question in a press conference?
No, I don't think so.
Or a fan got mad and booed him while he was on the field? I mean, maybe there's a couple of guys who go, maybe I do need to rethink some things.
Right.
It's been going really poorly, and this is the final straw, and I need to make some changes that are overdue that I maybe have been putting off.
Abraham makes a good point. Here's the thing. Some fans lose regardless. If you boo, you're called a fair weather fan. If you show up to support the team and boo, you're still called a fair weather fan. It's a tough one, but I do think it's okay for fans to voice their displeasure. I absolutely do. I would expect it. And if I'm Manny Machado, if I'm Xander Bogaerts, and I'm making a combined $60 million, and both of them have not great at all, like I need to know that that's going to happen.
If you want the team to win, clearly the worst thing you can do as a fan is probably not show up and not watch.
Correct.
That's going to hurt the organization as a whole. There's no way that's going to help. So if you're showing up, you're doing your part as a fan. At that point, I think however you just want to watch the game is up
to
you.
That's on you.
That's just up to you. I don't boo. I really don't. I don't boo opposing players. I don't boo home players. I just don't think it is worth my energy at the game to make that noise.
I
cheer.
You don't have a lot of energy to expand.
No, I cheer. I was on fire from Friday night when Luis Arraez, the game winner, I was up and I was excited.
Imagine not live. Imagine not live streaming that for the rest
of
us.
I didn't know it was going to happen.
I know.
It was unpredictable.
It's, I think.
Actually, again, I was pretty sure it was going to happen. I felt like it was about to happen.
I think our fan base deserves better than a 10-16 record at home, certainly. I do think that our fans are okay with losing if you left it all out there. Does anybody feel that they left it all out there the last 3 days? I don't, especially yesterday. Bro, just take the forfeit and get on the plane early. Get out and get rested in Atlanta. Seriously, like, that's what's going to happen yesterday.
Didn't we have that discussion of a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
If you could, just say, you know what? We're down 8-0. Boom, we're done.
We got no pitching left. Like, just
let's just go.
Let's regroup. Yeah, it sucks, dude. It really, really sucks. Yeah, I think fans should absolutely boo and show their displeasure. And, you know, all you ever hear, it's funny, too, because all you ever hear lauded in baseball and football is those Philly fans and those, oh, they boo you and then they love you and they boo you and they love you. And that's all you ever hear. Those are the fan bases that are lauded, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you ever hear. Oh, be smart fans like the Boston fans. Be smart fans like the Yankee fans. Be smart fans like the Philly fans. Padres do it once. twice, three times in a series, and you know, we're the worst people on the planet now? I don't think so.
I don't think the Padres are playing dumb baseball. They're just not playing good baseball.
Yeah. I didn't hear Manny's response, but I have a lot of people asking about it. I didn't hear it. I don't have that audio. So what did Manny say?
I didn't hear anything from Manny either. So if you heard something from Manny, go ahead and send it to us so we can react to it. But I did not hear or see any Manny Machado reaction video yesterday. Here's an update from the PGA Championship. First round is
Manny
underway.
I have his quotes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
In the UT.
But about the booing?
About the booing. Yeah, he says, I feel like we're playing good baseball. Manny Machado said, we just didn't play good baseball this series. It's a three-game series. It happens. That's baseball. Being on the lousy end of a three-game, this is AC, a three-game sweep dropped the Padres two games below 500. They walked from the field to the last of several choruses of boos heard throughout Wednesday's game and the series. Quote, we played bad baseball, Machado said. It's deserved. Machado later contended he did not mean the Padres played poorly. He says, we didn't play bad baseball. He said, we didn't execute at the end of the day.
There's a lot of, same with Mike Schilt.
I mean,
there's a lot of, you know, parsing of the words there. What is bad baseball? Some people say,
losing three in a row.
Some people will say bad baseball is when you're, like, you don't understand how to play the game and you're playing bad baseball. You can play good baseball and lose.
Yeah,
you can play bad baseball and win.
You absolutely can.
That's one of the weird things about the game, that you can play good baseball and oftentimes you don't end up winning. And you can play a bad game. You can commit three errors, two base running mistakes, but because your guys are just mashing it, there's just no way you can lose the game. Doesn't mean you played a good game. It means you were squaring up the baseball. Maybe the other pitcher had a really bad day. And that doesn't mean you're playing good baseball.
Oh, he said, I guess he said he didn't hear the boos. It's very Manny. It's like, if you don't know that about Manny at this point, I don't know what to tell you. That's very him. I didn't hear it. What do we want? What do we just want accountability. We want to hear guys say we're terrible. We're going to turn it around. I think that's what most fans.
Like, I thought that's what he said the other day.
I'm not going to speak for everyone.
In his long comments that he made, pretty open and going, yeah, I'm not where I want to be right now, and we're trying to get there. I think I will be there.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not worried that
again.
I will eventually get there. I'll be where I'm supposed to be. And you can either choose to believe him or not. His track record says he will get there, but there's always the chance that he won't. If I'm Manny, I'm going to continue to believe that I will. I will get there at some point.
Yeah, I mean, as a player of his caliber, you have to. You have to have that arrogance. You have to have it. They all need it. Xander needs to have it. Manny needs, they have to have that arrogance. I think it's the only way they can get back to being the players that they were, period. I don't think they can mope around and be sad. I think you have to have it.
The second you hear a guy say,
I'm screwed.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Xander's actually said it this year.
Yeah,
that's actually a little more concerning.
More worried about Xander than I am about Manny.
That is more concerning to me than hearing, oh, I didn't hear the boos. I'm just trying to execute up there. That is, honestly, more concerning to me than when a guy says, I have no idea what I'm doing up there.
Right. I'll hold off on my PGA Championship update for a second. Get to the break.
Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome. Eno Saris coming up at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned. More Ben and Woods coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, looky who's at the top of the leaderboard. PGA Championship first round, Valhalla Golf Club in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
Six under through 11 holes. That is not an easy course either. It's a big, like Torrey Pines or Bethpage Black, really big, long course. Xander Schauffele, six under with a two-shot lead over Tony Finau early, obviously, first round. Robert McIntyre at three under. And then you got a bunch of players at two under, including Jordan Spieth, Victor Hovland, Hideki Matsuyama. Rory McIlroy is at one under early in his round. And Tiger Woods is one over through about 11 holes, I believe, in his first round. Back on the course, getting limping around a little bit. Not easy for him to get around, but he wants to keep playing in the majors.
Like all of us, limping around and trying to figure it out.
48, just like the two of us.
That's right. Same age as Tiger Woods.
Same age as Tiger.
He's a little more accomplished.
I really hope Xander. He's playing some great golf. Obviously, Rory got him on Sunday last week to the Wells Fargo Championship. Had led that entire tournament. Now he's off to another hot start. Still looking for that first major. Shed the label of best player to have not won a major currently on the PGA Tour. He's ranked fourth in the world. Hasn't even won any tournament at all in almost 2 years.
Crazy to me.
Yet he finishes top 10.
All the time.
All the time. He's always there. Yeah. Just hasn't been able to finish it lately. It's probably starting to get a little bit.
It's got to stick
in his head a little bit.
It's got to get in your dome a little bit, man.
But off to a great start today at the PGA Championships. Got a two-shot lead already over Tony Finau.
I look way short in the chat because my camera. Somebody said, "Is there no big boy chairs left for Woods?" BBW, by the way, your old pal.
BBW.
Yeah, I got a great take that I saw on Twitter last night. I wish I could take credit for it. I'd like to discuss it after, maybe with Enos Harris. It was a really, really good take about the San Diego Padres. Really good. Like blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued about this.
Yeah. Very good.
All right. Well, why don't we just get to it then? We'll take a little time out. When we come back, we'll get to our Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Saris, get his perspective on what's going on with the Friars and more. We'll get to that coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. All right. Thanks for hanging with us. Hopefully we saved enough time here. I want to have a good chat with Eno Saris coming up. This hour, Ben & Woods, brought to you by Prize Picks. Join the biggest moments in sports with Prize Picks. Pick your players, pick your stats, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for details. Pauly is setting Eno up. We will get right out to him after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark, by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben & Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
You know, baseball is often a confounding sport. It seems as though, Woods, for the Padres, though, the last few seasons especially, very little makes sense with your San Diego Padres just from time to time. That's why when you get into the numbers, you try to throw out the smaller sample sizes and you look at the bigger picture. I'm not even sure the bigger picture numbers make that much sense for the San Diego Padres. And I wanted to ask Eno Saris of The Athletic about it as he joins us here on 97.3 The Fan. How much is this just me being too close to it, Eno? And how much is it that the Padres don't necessarily always make a ton of sense, even by those longer term numbers?
I don't know. I mean, they, in terms of, like, you know, runs scored and runs against.
Yeah, like last year they had the great run differential, but it didn't translate into wins necessarily. This year, again, positive run differential, you know, record under 500 again. And those things that were told even out over time have not evened out as much, I think, for the Padres as they do with other teams.
The run differential is pretty close to zero. It's 4 runs.
Nowadays, after yesterday, so.
Yeah, and but the one thing that I have noticed watching this team is there's a little bit of feast and famine.
Yep.
And I think it's a little bit more on the runs allowed side, where, you know, they've had games where, you know, they just gave up 8 and 6. They've had three double digit games, plus some 9s and 8s in there. So you know, and this flies in the face of what I thought that they, you know, is more of a strength this year. I was happy that they got Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito, and thought that, you know, that Michael King was going to be an ace, and sometimes he looks like an ace.
Yep.
You know, but the back end hasn't been exactly what I'd hoped for them. And so I wonder if, you know, I don't know. I hate to like be reactionary, but you know, Robbie Snelling isn't quite doing exactly what he did last year, but you know, if he has a couple of good starts in a row, I'd be considering him as a call-up.
Yeah, and Adam Mazur's another one that just got promoted to AAA, you know, and he's got some pretty good stuff too as well. But, you know, what it boils down to for me with this team, and I saw a really good tweet from, I wish I had this, you know, Shirtless Whitson is one of our guys on Twitter, and tweeted yesterday, crazy that our playoff aspirations rested on Profar, on a one-year million-dollar deal, Merrill, a rookie center, you know, moving position center fielder, and Cronenworth being good, and they've been effing great, and it doesn't even matter. Doesn't the Padres' struggles really boil down to their highest-paid players offensively not performing and, you know, doing offense well? That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if, for me, I look at that and I go, the Dodgers aren't going to be anywhere right now if Mookie and Freddie and Will Smith and Ohtani aren't doing anything, because the bottom, I know they've come on a little bit recently, but their pitching can be suspect at times as well. If those guys aren't being stars, they're not going to win 105 games. And they still may not. You never know. But that's, for me, what it boils down to with this team.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I mean, other than the back end of the staff, I mean, one thing that I see here is, yeah, Manny, Ha-Seong, and Xander combined under 100 WRC plus, meaning that, you know, under league average. You know, they just had some bat speed numbers come out, and it's funny because Manny Machado's maximum exit velocity is down. You know, he hasn't hit a ball as hard this year as he has in the past, down about, you know, 2 miles, 3 miles from last year almost.
Yep.
And that's what's correlated most highly with bat speed. We don't have bat speed numbers going back, but it's possible he's lost a little bat speed. You know, that's the thing. Except he also has the best bat speed on the Padres still. And it's kind of something that we knew would come with Manny Machado as he got older. Aging comes for everyone. So it's not going to be like a fall off a cliff type stuff. So I think this got to be somewhat ramifications of the surgery and just getting back on track. Like, I don't know. I don't doubt him that much. And I don't doubt Xander that much either, because he's got such a great hit tool. You know, I think he shows flashes of getting, putting multi-hit games together.
Yep.
And I think he'll be fine too. And I think, you know, Kim is, he's best for his defense, and once the rest of the offense goes, you know, gets humming, I think he'll make his contributions. But I don't think actually him, he's actually pretty close to league average too, and that might be his true talent.
You know, Sarah's from The Athletic is with us, and I want to talk about an issue that's popping up, and I think it was one of your competitors, one of our favorites, Jesse Rogers, did a piece on load management coming to baseball.
Oh,
we've heard
no.
about it in basketball, and one of the teams and people they talked to heavily in the piece was Mike Schilt, and how the Padres track, like, every sprint that a guy does during a game, whether it's a foul ball that he ran out, or you know, you try to steal but it's fouled off and you have to go back. All that movement goes into their equation on how much you've used a guy and when he needs rest, and you know, maximizing effectiveness. Have you seen any data in terms of, you know, should guys be playing less? Should they be getting more time off than they're getting over the course of a 162-game season? And is this the wave of the future in baseball to follow what basketball has been doing?
I haven't seen that type of research for baseball yet, but I can tell you, I mean, I can tell you from like back-to-back-to-backs for relievers, you know, as a, just an example, that pitchers are much worse in the third of a back-to-back-to-back. Velo down, strikeouts down, results worse. And so that's kind of a corollary. But I've also seen in basketball, like Joel Embiid's numbers, when he's played like two or three straight games, versus when he's had one off, are pretty stark. And I would say that baseball has the most grueling schedule out of every sport. You know, not a lot of rest days baked in. Even, you know, basketball and baseball and football have much, much more rest baked into their schedule. And so I think it's, I know it's annoying as a fan, especially if you've traveled far to see somebody and he's not playing that game. But the nice thing about baseball too is you have three game series. So if you, you know, if you are traveling to see Tatis somewhere, then make sure you go to two games, I think. You know, it's not, they haven't done that yet, but in the future I expected more. And one thing that came out of my Bat Speed story this week was that, you know, as we chase bat speed more and more, as an arms race, a little bit akin to pitching velocity, hitters are turning faster and faster. We're seeing an increase in oblique injuries.
I saw that.
And we are, and you know, Tristan Casas on the Red Sox said that the doctor told him it was like a car crash inside his body because he was turning so hard that when he was decelerating, he was ripping his cartilage out between his ribs. And, you know, so one of the things that hitters do when they're struggling is they hit the grind, you know, and they swing and they swing and they go in the cage and they swing and they swing and they swing. And not every team tracks those swings. And I think that is leading a little bit to our rise in oblique injuries. You know, if you were a pitcher, you would never throw three bullpens the day you start a game. But if you're a hitter and you're really struggling, you might take 100 swings on game day to try and get better.
It's so interesting to me too. Yeah, because you always, the old school baseball mentality is, hey, just get back there on the tee, get that toss going, work the machine, whatever you got to get that velo machine. And it reminds me of the great quote from John Kruk: "You can't pull fat, and you can't pull fat." I have never once had an oblique injury, never, and I probably never will. And I take a lot of cuts during the week. We're talking to our pal Eno Saris from The Athletic here on Ben and Woods. I wanted to ask you, sticky stuff has reared its ugly head once again. Ronel Blanco from the Houston Astros got popped the other night. I know I saw them checking Yamamoto's glove in San Francisco. Is this still happening in baseball? You know, even Dallas Braden, who was the opposing play-by-play guy or the color guy in the A's game, said, "I thought it was just sweat and rosin." But you did a deep dive onto the numbers of spin. Is this still happening in our beloved game?
I kind of don't think he was doing it. First of all, he's a changeup guy.
Yeah.
But I have heard that a lot of times the sticky stuff usage is for one pitch in particular. But I didn't see any change in spin on his breaking ball. So, you know, either he's been doing it forever, so the baseline would be the same, or he wasn't doing it last night, you know, in the same way that we think of when we think of cheating. I think basically the high-end cheating, the spider tack where the ball's still attached to your finger, that's gone because the checks would, it's really, that spider tech is really hard to get off your finger after you put it on. I mean, that's like part of the deal. And so you can't, there's no way to put it on your finger, pitch for a little bit, and then get off your finger in time to have the check. But what I have heard is that a pitcher will, he'll get a ball sticky in the dugout while the hitter's hitting and, while the hitters are hitting. He'll get his hand and a ball sticky, so that when he goes out to the field, he's a little sticky, but it goes away over the course of an inning. So, you know, people are still doing little things, but I think the real aggressive cheating where you get 500 RPM on your pitches, I think that's gone.
You know, there was some interesting Padres-related data. You mentioned the bat speed stuff that came out that you wrote about, including Luis Arraez having the slowest bat speed in baseball, but a lot of the guys with the slowest bat speed have good OPS numbers that make a lot of contact. And then the one that I found interesting, and maybe you can kind of explain this to our audience, the pitchers that get the slowest bat speeds, and the pitcher that sees the slowest bat speed in baseball was Robert Suarez. And I'm imagining it's because guys are trying to shorten up so much to hit the 100, but then they do that and they can't hit it anywhere. They just hit routine fly balls off of him. And it's been obviously incredibly effective, whatever he is doing this year.
Yeah, he is fascinating. One note about Arraez is, he may have the slowest bat speed in the majors, but he also has the shortest swing in the majors. And so that works in his favor. It's just a real short, quick swing. So there is a relationship between swing length and swing speed. that matters.
And, Tatis has like one of the longest ones, but also one of the hardest. So that, you know, obviously power combination like doubled there when you do that.
Yeah, there's like a kind of a, you know, the longer, faster swings have more power. They make contact out in front of the plate, which makes the swing longer. You know, like if you pull a ball, you're getting contact out in front of the plate. They measure that speed and length at contact. So if Tatis is pulling the ball, then his swing is going to look longer and faster just by nature of where he's hitting the ball. So some of these stats need more context over time. I prefer kind of short. I prefer like quick and fast, like, you know, short swing and fast bat speed. That does kind of describe. Tatis is not 8 foot or 8.5 feet. That's Baez and Stanton. So, you know, he has a slightly longer than average swing, but not like really long. And Manny Machado actually has a shorter swing than Tatis. Maybe it's Machado's a little bit longer than average. Tatis is a little bit shorter than average. They're okay because they have so much speed. But anyway, Suarez, the deal about Suarez is this. He throws high in the zone. And I think that's the ticket, because you have to, like contact point is matters here. In order to get to a ball high in the zone, you have to have a shorter swing. Like, you just think about, like, just like do a little fake batting, you know, wherever you are in your office, you know, and just like try to get the bat to a high pitch. You basically just flip that bat around. If it's a low pitch, you can take a scoopier swing. You can get the bat has further to go, you know? And so I think that's the big deal, because Ryan Yarbrough is only a couple spots away from Suarez in terms of the pitchers that inspire the shortest, slowest bats. And Ryan Yarbrough is nothing like Suarez.
No.
In terms of velo, in terms of arsenal. But one thing he does have in common is he pitches high in the zone like Suarez.
Even if you throw slower like Yarbrough does, he's what, fastball, changeup guy mostly? He throws it, what does he throw, his changeup up?
Cutter
up. Yeah, up in the zone, I guess, is key for that. That's it. That's really interesting, the disparity between Robert Suarez and Ryan Yarbrough, both getting slow. Yeah, that's nuts, actually. Makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, the list of the slowest guys is all over the place. Joe Ryan is on there. But Joe Boyle is on there. I mean, Joe Boyle has no command, all gas, and Joe Ryan doesn't have, I think he throws 93, you know. Verlander's on the list. It's a really interesting group of pitchers. But the thing that they do, the top 20 in the slowest bat speeds go up in the zone 38% of the time. The league average is 31. So that was the biggest difference I found in that group.
Interesting numbers. Eno, always appreciate it. Have a good week. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Eno Saris, our Smart Baseball segment brought to you each week by 7 Mile Casino.
Do you have that list in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
It was Imanaga on there?
Of the slowest speeds bats against him? I don't think he was on there.
Because he was also, he was up.
He throws up, though, for sure.
As McKee says in the chat, he throws up. In the zone as well. Dylan Cease throws up in the zone as well, I noticed. But he's pretty, he can dot it kind of where he wants. But that's good stuff, man. That's really interesting. Yarbrough and Suarez, you couldn't get two different pitchers.
Did you read that piece by Jesse Rogers?
No.
About usage? Because there's a lot of Mike Shildt quotes in it. And they actually like hand him a piece of paper every day. It's like color-coded. And they'll see like which players are in the red. Like, wow, Tatis, he had four balls that he had to sprint, you know, 40 yards in the outfield for, and he tried to steal second twice, even though it was fouled off. Every time they, like, accelerate and do runs, it'll look at usage. Now, you could play a game. If you go 0 for 4 and you strike out looking twice and a ball is not hit to you, they'll go, he's pretty much in the green. He didn't do anything. He didn't work that hard that day on the field. And then there's a guy who may have, you know, worked their butt off, because the nature of baseball is, it's, you may be in the game, but you may not do much on a certain day.
Think about Jackson Merrill the other night. All the balls hit to him in center field. He's probably sliding towards the yellow.
The Padres are taking that into account when it comes to usage and who they think might need a day off.
What night was that? What was the night he was running all around? Was that Monday night or was it Tuesday? Because if it's Tuesday night, it kind of makes sense that he didn't play yesterday, because he was running around like a lunatic one of those games.
Now, you know, the numbers are still so kind of new. Is it going to help him later on by resting him more after those stressful days?
Know.
We don't even know.
We don't know yet.
But, you know, the Padres are on the cutting edge, it sounds like, in looking at these numbers.
It's weird, too, because we always complain about the Padres being last to the table. Is this what we want? I'm really debating, having an inner debate with myself.
Not sure, but, you know, they're like tracking all movement on the field, whether or not. All right, thanks for hanging with us. Hopefully we saved enough time here. I want to have a good chat with Eno Saris coming up. This hour of Ben and Woods brought to you by Prize Picks. Join the biggest moments in sports with Prize Picks. Pick your players, pick your stats, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for details. Pauly is setting Eno up. We will get right out to him after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the Super Polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
You know, baseball is often a confounding sport. It seems as though, Woods, for the Padres, though, the last few seasons especially, very little makes sense with your San Diego Padres just from time to time. That's why when you get into the numbers, you try to throw out the smaller sample sizes and you look at the bigger picture. I'm not even sure the bigger picture numbers make that much sense for the San Diego Padres. And I wanted to ask Eno Saris of The Athletic about it as he joins us here on 97.3 The Fan. How much is this just me being too close to it, Eno? And how much is it that the Padres don't necessarily always make a ton of sense, even by those longer term numbers?
I don't know. I mean, in terms of runs scored and runs against.
Yeah, like last year they had the great run differential, but it didn't translate into wins necessarily. This year again, positive run differential, record under 500 again, and those things that were told even out over time have not evened out as much, I think, for the Padres as they do with other teams.
The run differential is pretty close to zero. It's 4 runs.
Now it is after yesterday, so.
Yeah, but the one thing that I have noticed watching this team is there's a little bit of feast and famine.
Yep.
And I think it's a little bit more on the runs allowed side where, they've had games where, they just gave up 8 and 6. They've had, 2, 3 double digit games, plus some 9s and 8s in there. So, and this flies in the face of what I thought that they, was more of a strength this year. I was happy that they got Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito, and thought that, that Michael King was going to be an ace, and sometimes he looks like an ace.
Yep.
The back end hasn't been exactly what I'd hoped for them. And so I wonder if, I don't know. I hate to be reactionary, but Robbie Snelling isn't quite doing exactly what he did last year. But if he has a couple of good starts in a row, I'd be considering him as a call up.
Yeah, and Adam Azer is another one that just got promoted to AAA, and he's got some pretty good stuff too as well. But what it boils down to for me with this team, and I saw a really good tweet from, I wish I had this, Shirtless Whitson is one of our guys on Twitter, and tweeted yesterday, crazy that our playoff aspirations rested on Profar on a 1-year $1 million deal, Merrill, a rookie center, moving position center fielder, and Cronenworth being good, and they've been effing great, and it doesn't even matter. Doesn't the Padres' struggles really boil down to their highest paid players offensively not performing and, doing offense well? That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I look at that and I go, the Dodgers aren't going to be anywhere right now if Mookie and Freddie and Will Smith and Ohtani aren't doing anything, because the bottom, I know they've come on a little bit recently, but their pitching can be suspect at times as well. If those guys aren't being stars, they're not going to win 105 games. And they still may not. You never know. But that's, for me, what it boils down to with this team.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Other than the back end of the staff, one thing that I see here is, Manny, Ha-Seong, and Xander combined under 100 WRC+, meaning that you know, under league average. You know, they just had some bat speed numbers come out, and it's funny because Manny Machado's maximum exit velocity is down. You know, he hasn't hit a ball as hard this year as he has in the past, down about, 2 miles, 3 miles from last year almost. Yep. And that's what's correlated most highly with bat speed. We don't have bat speed numbers going back, but it's possible he's lost a little bat speed. You know, that's the thing. Except he also has the best bat speed on the Padres still. And it's kind of something that we knew would come with Manny Machado as he got older. Aging comes for everyone. So it's not going to be like a fall off a cliff type stuff. So I think this got to be somewhat ramifications of the surgery and just getting back on track. I don't know. I don't doubt him that much. And I don't doubt Xander that much either, because he's got such a great hit tool. You know, I think he shows flashes of putting multi-hit games together. Yep. And I think he'll be fine too. And I think, you know, Kim is, he's best for his defense. And once the rest of the offense goes, you know, gets humming, I think he'll make his contributions. But I don't think actually he's actually pretty close to league average too. And that might be his true talent.
Eno Saris from The Athletic is with us, and I want to talk about an issue that's popping up, and I think it was one of your competitors, one of our favorites, Jesse Rogers, did a piece on load management coming to baseball.
Oh,
we've heard
no.
about it in basketball, and one of the teams and people they talked to heavily in the piece was Mike Schilt, and how the Padres track like every sprint that a guy does during a game, whether it's a foul ball that he ran out, or you know, you try to steal but it's fouled off and you have to go back. All that movement goes into their equation on how much you've used a guy and when he needs rest, and you know, maximizing effectiveness. Have you seen any data in terms of, you know, should guys be playing less? Should they be getting more time off than they're getting over the course of a 162-game season? And is this the wave of the future in baseball to follow what basketball has been doing?
I haven't seen that type of research for baseball yet, but I can tell you, I can tell you from like back-to-back-to-backs for relievers, you know, as just an example, that pitchers are much worse in the third of a back-to-back-to-back. Velo down, strikeouts down, results worse. And so that's kind of a corollary. But I've also seen in basketball, like Joel Embiid's numbers, when he's played like two or three straight games, versus when he's had one off, are pretty stark. And I would say that baseball has the most grueling schedule out of every sport. You know, not a lot of rest days baked in. Even, you know, basketball and baseball and football have much, much more rest baked into their schedule. And so I think I know it's annoying as a fan, especially if you've traveled far to see somebody and he's not playing that game. But the nice thing about baseball too is you have 3-game series. So if you are traveling to see Tatis somewhere, then make sure you go to 2 games, I think. You know, it's not, they haven't done that yet, but in the future I expect it more. And one thing that came out of my bat speed story this week was that, you know, as we chase bat speed more and more, as an arms race, a little bit akin to, pitching velocity, hitters are turning faster and faster. We're seeing an increase in oblique injuries.
I saw that.
And we are, and you know, Tristan Casas on the Red Sox said that the doctor told him it was like a car crash inside his body, because he was turning so hard that when he was decelerating, he was ripping his cartilage out between his ribs. And you know, so one of the things that hitters do when they're struggling is they hit the grind, you know, and they swing and they swing and they go in the cage and they swing and they swing and they swing. And not every team tracks those swings. And I think that is leading a little bit to our rise in oblique injuries. You know, if you were a pitcher, you would never throw 3 bullpens the day you start a game. But if you're a hitter and you're really struggling, you might take 100 swings on game day to try and get better.
It's so interesting to me, too. Yeah, because you always, the old school baseball mentality is, hey, just get back there on the tee, get that toss going, work the machine, whatever you got to get that velo machine. And it reminds me of the great quote from John Kruk, you can't pull fat. And you can't. You can't pull fat. I have never had, never once, had an oblique injury. Never. And I probably never will. And I take a lot of cuts during the week. We're talking to our pal, Eno Saris from The Athletic here on Ben and Woods. I wanted to ask you, sticky stuff has reared its ugly head once again. Ronel Blanco from the Houston Astros got popped the other night. I know I saw them checking Yamamoto's glove in San Francisco. Is this still happening in baseball? You know, even Dallas Braden, who was the opposing play-by-play guy or the color guy in the A's game, said, I thought it was just sweat and rosin. But you did a deep dive onto the numbers of spin. Is this still happening in our beloved game?
I kind of don't think he was doing it. First of all, he's a changeup guy.
Yeah.
But I have heard that, a lot of times the sticky stuff usage is for one pitch in particular. But I didn't see any change in spin on his breaking ball. So, either he's been doing it forever, so the baseline would be the same, or he wasn't doing it last night, in the same way that we think of when we think of cheating. I think basically the high-end cheating, the spider tack where the ball's still attached to your finger, that's gone because the checks would, it's really, that spider tech is really hard to get off your finger after you put it on. I mean, that's like part of the deal. And so you can't, there's no way to put it on your finger, pitch for a little bit, and then get off your finger in time to have the check. But what I have heard is that a pitcher will, he'll get a ball sticky in the dugout while the hitter's hitting and while the hitters are hitting. He'll get his hand and a ball sticky, so that when he goes out to the field, he's a little sticky, but it goes away over the course of an inning. So, people are still doing little things, but I think the real aggressive cheating where you get 500 RPM on your pitches, I think that's gone.
There was some interesting Padres-related data. You mentioned the bat speed stuff that came out that you wrote about, including Luis Arraez having the slowest bat speed in baseball, but a lot of the guys with the slowest bat speed have good OPS numbers that make a lot of contact. And then the one that I found interesting, and maybe you can kind of explain this to our audience, the pitchers that get the slowest bat speeds, and the pitcher that sees the slowest bat speed in baseball was Robert Suarez. And I'm imagining it's because guys are trying to shorten up so much to hit the 100, but then they do that and they can't hit it anywhere. They just hit routine fly balls off of him, and it's been obviously incredibly effective, whatever he is doing this year.
Yeah, he is fascinating. One note about Arraez is he may have the slowest bat speed in the majors, but he also has the shortest swing in the majors. And so that works in his favor. It's just a real short, quick swing. So there is a relationship between swing length and swing speed that matters.
But has like one of the longest ones, but also one of the hardest. So that, obviously power combination like doubled there when you do that.
Yeah, there's like a kind of a, the longer, faster swings have more power. They make contact out in front of the plate, which makes the swing longer. If you pull a ball, you're getting contact out in front of the plate. They measure bat speed and length at contact. So if Tatis is pulling the ball, then his swing is going to look longer and faster just by nature of where he's hitting the ball. So some of these stats need more context over time. I prefer kind of short. I prefer like quick and fast, like short swing and fast bat speed. That does kind of describe. Tatis is not 8 foot or 8.5 feet. That's Baez and Stanton. So, he has a slightly longer than average swing, but not like really long. And Manny Machado actually has a shorter swing than Tatis. Machado's a little bit longer than average. Tatis a little bit shorter than average. They're okay because they have so much speed. But anyway, Suarez, the deal about Suarez is this. He throws high in the zone. And I think that's the ticket, because you have to, like contact point is matters here. In order to get to a ball high in the zone, you have to have a shorter swing. Like, you just think about, like, just, like, do a little fake batting, you know, wherever you are in your office, you know, and just, like, try to get the bat to a high pitch. You basically just flip that bat around. If it's a low pitch, you can take a scoopier swing. You can get the bat has further to go, you know. And so I think that's the big deal, because Ryan Yarbrough is only a couple spots away from Suarez in terms of the pitchers that inspire the shortest, slowest bats. And Ryan Yarbrough is nothing like Suarez.
No.
In terms of velo, in terms of arsenal. But one thing he does have in common is he pitches high in the zone like Suarez.
Even if you throw slower like Yarbrough does, he's what, fastball changeup guy mostly? He throws it, what does he throw, his changeup up?
Cutter
up. Yeah, up in the zone, I guess, is key for that. That's it. That's really interesting. The disparity between Robert Suarez and Ryan Yarbrough, both getting slow. Yeah, that's nuts, actually. Makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, the list of the slowest guys is all over the place. Joe Ryan is on there. But Joe Boyle is on there. I mean, Joe Boyle has no command, all gas, and Joe Ryan is doesn't have. I think he throws 93. You know, Verlander's on the list. It's a really interesting group of pitchers. But the thing that the top 20 in the slowest bat speeds go up in the zone 38% of the time. The league average is 31. So that was the biggest difference I found in that group.
Interesting numbers. Eno, always appreciate it. Have a good week. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Eno Saris, our Smart Baseball segment brought to you each week by 7 Mile Casino.
Do you have that list in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
It was Imanaga on there?
Of the slowest speeds bats against him? I don't think he was on there.
Because he was also, he was up.
He throws up, though, for sure.
As McKee says in the chat, he throws up in the zone as well. Dylan Cease throws up in the zone as well. I noticed, but he's pretty, he can dot it kind of where he wants, but that's good stuff, man. That's really interesting. Yarbrough and Suarez, you couldn't get two different pitchers.
Did you read that piece by Jesse Rogers?
No.
About usage? Because there's a lot of Mike Shildt quotes in it, and they actually like hand him a piece of paper every day. It's like color-coded, and they'll see like which players are in the red. Like, wow, Tatis, he had four balls that he had to sprint, you know, 40 yards in the outfield for, and he tried to steal second twice, even though it was fouled off. Every time they, like, accelerate and do runs, it'll look at usage. Now, you could play a game. If you go 0-for-4 and you strike out looking twice and a ball is not hit to you, they'll go, he's pretty much in the green. He didn't do anything. He didn't work that hard that day on the field. And then there's a guy who may have, you know, worked their butt off, because the nature of baseball is, it's, you may be in the game, but you may not do much on a certain day.
Think about Jackson Merrill the other night. All the balls hit to him in center field. He's probably sliding towards the yellow.
And so the Padres are taking that into account when it comes to usage and who they think might need a day off.
What night was that? What was the night he was running all around? Was that Monday night or was it Tuesday? Because if it's Tuesday night, it kind of makes sense that he didn't play yesterday, because he was running around like a lunatic one of those games.
Now, you know, the numbers are still so kind of new. Is it going to help him later on by resting him more after those stressful days?
Know.
We don't even know.
We don't know yet.
But, you know, the Padres are on the cutting edge, it sounds like, in looking at these numbers.
It's weird, too, because we always complain about the Padres being last to the table. Is this what we want? I'm really debating, having an inner debate with myself.
Not sure. But, you know, they are, like, tracking all movement on the field. Whether or not it's part of the game or not, like who is getting the most mileage put on their legs in any certain day. Fascinating stuff. We got another hour to go before the roundtable. Paulie's got some headlines and the Rindle Report coming up. Don't go anywhere. More Ben and Woods next on 97.3 The Fan.